The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
The Legendarium podcast is brought to you by
you. So please visit patreon.com/legendarium
to support the show. But for now,
welcome to the Legendarium.
Let's turn Bilbo into a horrible person. So, yeah.
You know, I feel like I'm usually the bloodthirsty one on the podcast, but Ryan's over here saying, no, slit his friggin' throat. Welcome, everybody, to the Legendarium podcast. My name is Craig Hanks, and I'm your host. And over there, I don't like him, it's Ryan.
Wow, you were busy doing something else today, weren't
and
you?
And I don't like her. It's Stephanie.
Good.
No, that's a lie. I like both of you. It's a lie. You're right. I've been busy setting up a live stream for today. I did not do any insults. I could have gone a Gollum direction and like something about if someone liked it, then you put a ring on it.
It's okay. Yeah. We'll let it slide. We know how difficult it can be to come up with ways of insulting us, so.
I'm sure. So today we are talking The Hobbit. This is chapters, I'm hoping, 4 through 7. we do have another little voice in the studio that may pop in from time to time. I'm hoping chapters 4 through 7. Last time we tried to do 1 through 7. That didn't go so well.
Yeah.
We had quite a bit to say, it turns out. And so today, maybe we'll get through the rest of that. What we're doing is The Hobbit, the episodes where they're going through the mountain pass, they get captured by goblins, Bilbo falls into Gollum's cave and escapes, and the dwarves and Gandalf and Bilbo go via eagle to Beren's house, and that's about where we're at. They leave Beren's house, and they're heading into Mirkwood at the end of Chapter 7. Am I about right here?
That sounds about right.
Sounds good.
Okay, all right. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. We do have a live YouTube audience here, and so I may take a break every now and then just to address your questions and whatnot. I am sorry if we don't get to all of them. I'm going to be trying to pay attention to both my notes and the YouTube stream. And this is just...
You're going to watch Craig fall apart here.
I'm going to lose my something. Something that's not appropriate for the in-room audience that we currently have.
I know, Ryan's kind of special that way.
He's
I need to learn new swear words.
Very sensitive. Anyway... So let's get started with where we're at. We've left Elrond's house. We're just going to dive right in. We left Elrond's house, and we're now venturing into the wilds. Okay, so we're on our adventure. We've read the map. We know what we need to do, and we know where we need to go to do it. So we start off on the quest into the mountain pass. Do you guys care at all about Chapter 4? This journey through the mountain pass, does this leave any impact on you? We'll get to, you know, maybe fun facts and all that stuff later, but this is one of those chapters. The reason I ask this question is because for me, it's one of those chapters that kind of gets lost a little bit because I love Elrond's house and I love the Gollum stuff. And Chapter 4 is great, but because it's kind of sandwiched between the two things that I really want to read, I forget, right?
Okay.
But what do you guys think
of it? Well, not every chapter in a book has to be, you know, meaty, heavy, you know, discussion-worthy material. This is them getting from point A to point B. Like, and yes, some things happen. We are dealing with, you know, I think this is one of those instances of like where I actually appreciated the fact that we got to see maybe another concept in the later tellings of this with the rock giants.
Mm-hmm.
Like that would be really cool to be a part of. But, you know, as a whole, I'm okay with it just being, hey, we're going through a mountain pass and we're getting into where the goblins are.
Right. What do you think, Stephanie?
So I'm sitting here thinking, I listened to this today, this morning, while I was working at home. And honestly, I was like, I'm pretty sure I remember what the chapter was even about, but I wasn't positive that was the chapter we were talking about. So obviously it left a huge impact on me because I listened to it today and I couldn't even tell you what was going on in there.
Well, it's like I said, I do tend to, it gets lost in the shuffle for me as well. But every time I read it, I love it. I love chapter 4.
So, where does chapter 4 end?
At chapter 4 ends with Bilbo crashing down. So
everything that happens with the goblins is all in chapter 4. Okay.
Yeah, it's called Over Hill and Under Hill.
Yes, okay.
So they're going over the mountains. There's a big thunderstorm. They hide away in a cave. And then the goblins open up the cave and take them prisoner. Yeah, so now they're under hill.
Yes, and kind of kidnap them through their crack in the wall.
I got to be honest, guys. Last episode, like in the Reddit comments and stuff, people seemed to like the Professor Craig thing.
Mm-hmm.
So
I actually really liked the Professor Craig thing.
Oh, you did?
So having read the books, I was like, okay. Like, I really have not a whole lot to say about this book, but learning about it is really interesting. So I enjoyed last episode just sitting here. So I'm hoping the listeners just enjoyed listening to
it. So Stephanie and Craig's burner accounts on Reddit.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks, Ryan.
You're welcome. No, it's fascinating information. It's like the special features on a DVD, only you get it in the normal content.
There you go. So in this episode, we have obviously Bilbo, our point of view character, getting taken prisoner. It is interesting. He gets some XP from just by waking up and detecting what's going on in time to warn Gandalf. So Bilbo levels up a little bit. But despite that, he is still out of his depth. Right, and so we have all of these goblins now, and Bilbo is, shall we say, ill-equipped to deal with the goblins, right? And that's fine, because the goblins are set up as... I think it's really interesting, right after the troll episode, the goblins now are set up as kind of the anti-dwarves.
Mm-hmm.
Which, if you have followed along with our other Tolkien episodes and you've read a little bit of the Silmarillion, you know that goblins and orcs, which are, that's the same thing. They're interchangeable. Goblins are orcs.
I was going to ask that because it does not seem that they are the same.
Right. Yeah. And we'll get to maybe why that could be. But in this case, they're set up as the anti-dwarves. It's talked about how they've tunneled under the mountains and they're second to none when it comes to mining and that sort of thing. Or I should say second to none, except the dwarves, right? The dwarves mm-hmm. are the masters, and the goblins are a close second when it comes to this sort of craft. And so Bilbo, now he's had 3 chapters already where he's been dealing with dwarves primarily and is very out of place. These are dwarves from the wilderness, and they're adventurous and boisterous, and they're ready to go to war. And Bilbo misses his afternoon tea and his bed many, many times mm-hmm. throughout the book, right? And so he's out of his depth. But now he's really, really out of his depth because he has the anti-dwarves that he doesn't know how to deal with. But the dwarves are, well, they'd be screwed if it weren't for Gandalf, but they at least know what they're up against, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
you'd expect there to be a little bit of a fight at least.
Well, yeah. And there is, when Gandalf shows up, he slashes the great goblin. Does he chop his head off or just slice his neck? One of the two. And then they all take off running. And Bilbo is being carried on Keely's.
Oh, it's Bomber. No. It's one of the B names.
Balin.
That narrows it down.
Somebody tell me on YouTube who it is that's carrying Bilbo, because I cannot.
Because
quite
they give
remember.
Him crap about it out in the spider as well.
He's always having to be carried by.
It's by the same person, though. Yeah, maybe that's who it is. I don't know.
It's either Feely, Keely, Biffer, Buffer, Bomber, Dory, Nori, Ori, Oin, and Gloin.
It's one a bee name.
Yeah.
I know it's a bee name.
So, so now they're getting carried, or he's getting bounced around and carried around, and then the goblins sneak up behind the dwarves and jump him, and they crack his dwarven carrier over the head, and he falls down, and he falls into Gollum's cave. So that's where we're at with this. But before we leave the goblins behind, okay, so they're the anti-dwarves, which is important in part because when we have chapter one and all the dwarves arrive, the dwarves are very pushy but polite, right? They're coming in, oh, we're expected, and so we're going to come right into your house and invade your house. But they speak politely, right? Mm-hmm.
At your service.
Yeah, exactly. At your service, etc. Did you notice that the goblins speak much more politely than the trolls?
Politely?
He does talk about how they talk about horrible things, chopping them up into bits and all that stuff. But when I say politely, I mean gentlemanly. And so you have sentences like from the Great Goblin, "Who are these miserable persons?" That is a well-formed, educated sentence. Yeah, right?
You don't expect that to come out of a blithering imbecile of a creature.
Right. And so it's kind of this juxtaposition between the dwarves and the goblins. The goblins and the trolls. And the trolls, we talked last time about how they're they're Cockney by way of Iceland.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yes.
And now we have the goblins who are rather well spoken, you know. I don't know.
At least their royalty is. I mean, we don't get a ton of dialogue from the other ones, but at least their leadership is of an intellectual nature, at least.
Right. So anyway, it's interesting to hear them talk and to hear the juxtaposition. Is this something you guys noticed at all, or does it just kind of wash over you if you're not paying attention?
I didn't notice.
I think that's actually something, and I will attribute this to being heavily in the use of audiobooks, that's kind of dependent on the narrator.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can easily hide that fact or bring that fact out based on the performance. And I don't think it was done in such a way that it really made it a standout piece. It's not something that I think that he would have noticed and said, oh yeah, I need to make sure these characters sound more gentlemanly in their presentation.
Right. I don't attribute anything that Tolkien does in his writing to accident.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm giving him too much credit, but with something like this, like he knew exactly what he was doing when he made the trolls dirty Cockneys, right?
I believe that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we have the trolls who are obviously monsters. The goblins are the dwarves' opposites, which is interesting because later in The Lord of the Rings, there's going to be some talk of how the trolls are kind of the opposites of the Ents. Mm-hmm. And they're the enemy's mockery of the Ents. But in this book, at least, we don't have time for that sort of mythology.
And I think in a very modern sense, because of a lot of video games and things like that, we tend to pair up groupings that are similar in size and combat value, I guess, for lack of a term. Like, you would put an Ent against a troll for an equal battle. You wouldn't put a troll like and a goblin on the same part. But that's because of the kind of the gamification of our mentality nowadays and that sort of thing versus it being more of a civilization or a cultural piece in the dark side of this world.
Stephanie, any thoughts as we are moving beyond the goblins?
If I have any, I will definitely speak up, but...
Well, I want to make sure we don't leave you in the dust.
I was really struggling trying to figure out what in the world do I say about this book.
It's fine.
So,
it's fine. Because we're going to move on to Gollum here in just a moment, and this is probably going to take up the bulk of the episode, I would imagine. But Gollum is the most interesting part for us to talk about, in large part because this is the biggest change that Tolkien made to the book. So we talked about this a little bit last time, about the changes that were made. In 1937, he publishes the book, in The Hobbit. And I wouldn't say it's a runaway bestseller, but it's a hit. And people clamor for a sequel, and so his publisher says, we want a sequel, so he starts working on a sequel. 20 years later, here's your book. But in the meantime, as he's working on The Lord of the Rings, it's coming together, and he's deciding what he wants to make out of it, and he realizes that the ring that Bilbo found it needs to acquire a capital R, so to speak. This isn't just a ring of power or, you know, some lucky little talisman. It's the ring, right? And so as he develops this concept, he realizes that Chapter 5 is all wrong. And so he goes back and changes it dramatically. And I kind of mentioned last time, you know, anytime you want to get mad at George Lucas or whoever for changing their stories, the ultimate in that sort of thing was Tolkien. But he was also one of the cleverest about it. And I think I'll get to that in just a sec. So, Ryan, recap for us the Gollum bit, if you could.
Bilbo finds himself in a very dark, dank, and wet place. And Gollum's there. He discovers this creature, and after he's picked up the ring from this the ground here, whatever, and in order to escape, he's trying to find his way out. He knows Gollum knows the way out, and in trying to get him to lead him out, makes a deal with him that if they do a riddle game back and forth, and if Gollum can't solve his riddles, then he'll show him the way out, and if he can't solve Gollum's riddles, then Gollum gets to eat him. You know, totally fair trade. So they pass back and forth a few riddles, and Bilbo finally wins it by asking a not fair, not riddle, asking what's in my pocket.
Ah.
So, which then drives Gollum crazy, and Bilbo is able to escape because he puts the ring on, goes invisible for the first time, follows Gollum as he shows accidentally shows him the way out.
So, this was a year or two ago. I was at Lagoon. If you're not from Utah, which you're not, whoever's listening, this is our local
amusement park.
Thank you. That's the word I'm looking for. It's an amusement park, complete with all the carnival games that you can play. And so you got those 17-year-olds doing the carnival barker thing, and you know, come on over here and come play. And this one kid says, "Hey, do you like riddles?" And I was like, "Whatever." And he starts listing off riddles, but they're all the riddles from The Hobbit.
Oh, bad choice.
Yeah, he's like, I was like, you just picked the wrong guy. And so he asked me the first one. I knew instantly what it was. And I said, if I guess right, do I get a free game? He said, yeah, sure. So I gave him the answer. And we did like three of them before he realized that I knew the book better than he did. So I got a few free games out of it. So that was nice. Anyway, so we got the riddle game. And there's some really interesting stuff that I'm not sure that we want to get into now, just because it's really deep in the weeds. It's, if you recall, Tom Shippey, I've mentioned him a lot of times. If you go read Author of the Century by Tom Shippey, he goes into some detail about the significance of the riddle game and how this tells us what sort of similarities there are between Gollum and Bilbo. But what I find interesting about this is that now we've got Chapter 4 and 5 together. Bilbo has gone from something that's clearly out of his control. He is way out of his depth with the goblins. He's getting ferried around and rescued and all this stuff until he falls into Gollum's cave. And now we go from the dwarves opposite to Bilbo's opposite. So he's gotten a couple chances to like to level up with the trolls, to level up when he, you know, figures out that the goblins are coming, but now he's gonna reach level 2 Bilbo with this, because now he's in a situation that he can understand, because it's this weird withered ex-hobbit, I guess we would call him, right? So yeah.
But we will, I mean, basically, though, if this is the only book you've ever read, never watched movies or anything, you don't know that, though, right? He's just a creature.
Totally. And, yeah, and so in 1937, he's just this thing that Bilbo stumbles across. He's this weird, slimy little thing in a cave, and he's an obstacle for Bilbo to advance past. And we'll talk more about the changes that, that come about. Stephanie, when it comes to the Gollum chapter, what are the standout moments? What are the things that you remember, like between reads of The Hobbit, when you think back? Is it the riddles? Is it the weird plurals that, that Gollum has? Are there any like images that stand out?
Gollum is, I don't know. He was one of those characters that I wasn't real thrilled with the first time around. He's a lot more of a, he's a deeper character than I think he's originally given credit for. And maybe it is. Maybe it is because I've seen the movies and I've read the other books, and they give him more of a storyline later, and what he does with like Frodo and stuff that isn't quite in The Hobbit. But I think he's a good basis of, like you were saying about being an opposite for Bilbo, because who would have thought that this creature that lives beyond deep in this mountain would be as good as riddles and would know even some of the stuff that he was talking about?
Right.
Like, he's talking about wind and time, and you're like, you obviously leave the mountain at some point to know what a lot of, he's educated somewhere along the way.
Right.
Or he's sitting in on the goblin schooling. I don't know what he's doing, but.
So clearly more than meets the eye.
Yeah, he's a lot deeper than just this creature that eats raw fish and talks to himself.
Wait, were you writing my biography?
Yes.
Sorry, Ryan, you were going to say something.
Well, I like the character of Gollum a lot, but I think he's one of those, I don't want to use the term retcon, but he's been given a whole lot afterwards because of everything there.
Use it. This is the OG retcon.
Yeah.
This is the retcon extraordinaire. Yes, absolutely. We're going to talk more about retconning.
But that's, I think that's why he gets so much, and why he's a beloved character now, is because of how much weight he carries on later in the series and with this change. My first interaction with Gollum was actually in the 1980s animation. Have you ever seen that one, the old 1980s Hobbit animation?
Yeah, I've seen bits and pieces.
Yeah, that Gollum looks like if Littlefoot and Ducky from Land Before Time had a love child, and that child was on meth. Like,
I have seen the images.
that's what he looks like. And so in my mind, like the first, basically until the Peter Jackson films came out, Gollum was always this just really disgusting, slimy, not worm, but just creature there.
Yeah, yeah.
And his whole purpose was just like, just like the goblins, just like the spiders, just like anything else. Just that he's there. Like, I didn't find a lot of depth to him, but now I actually I appreciate him more.
Yeah, I know that I've told this story on the podcast before, so I apologize if you've already heard it. But when I went and saw The Fellowship of the Ring for the first time, it's in theaters, I'm 15 years old, maybe. It's okay, that mic doesn't record. So I'm about 15 years old, and I've never seen The Lord of the Rings. It's obviously just come out. So we go to the theater, the whole family, pack in, opening weekend, credits, you know, well, no credits, right? It's fade to black, and Galadriel's whispering at me, and I'm like, whew, in love with this movie immediately. And then as we go through the prologue, there's the episode where Bilbo finds the ring and Gollum is screaming in the background, "My precious," and all this stuff. And I'm sitting there saying, I've seen this movie before. Mm-hmm. I've seen this. How is this possible? And I'm racking my brain. It took me a good 5-10 minutes, distracted me from the rest of the prologue as much as I could be distracted. And so I'm trying to figure out why I knew this story, and it turns out that I had read The Hobbit and done a book report in like the eighth grade. And so I had seen this before, in a sense, right? But I didn't know that there was more to the story. I just thought, oh, that was a fun book, and I went on with my life. A buddy of mine tried to get me to read The Lord of the Rings. I said, no, that sounds like the stupidest title I've ever heard, The Lord of the Rings. That's dumb. I'm not going to read that. And I had no idea that the two were connected. And so when I think of The Hobbit, I always think of that image of Bilbo finding the ring and encountering Gollum, because obviously that imagery really, really stuck with me right up to that first viewing of The Fellowship of the Ring. It's a fantastic chapter.
So I have
a
question now. When did the obsession with Tolkien start then?
It was right then.
I mean, figured this was a lifelong that you had read the books and then the movie. That's what I figured this was. I didn't realize this was started with the movies.
You know, I'm not a crier, okay? Like, look, Ryan and Todd have done their crying. Like, I wish that I could, because I wish I could convey the amount of emotion I feel about that particular moment. Like, it's easy to look back and see things like turning points in your life, like, oh, if I had made a different decision there, things really would have turned out differently. Mm-hmm. You know, when my wife and I moved to Seattle, like, oh yeah, things would have really turned out differently if we hadn't done that, if we'd stayed in Utah. Things like that. It's easy to look back and see those turning points. But what's really rare is when you feel it in the moment. And I can't describe quite the feeling of sitting there and watching this prologue to Fellowship of the Ring and knowing that everything was different, that everything was going to change. I had similar smaller moments, you know, as I consumed the rest of the movies and then I devoured the books and I started in on The Silmarillion and I finished The Silmarillion and, you know, tears are streaming down my face and I just immediately go back to page one and start over again.
Just remember, this man has two kids.
What?
Just in comparison for the emotional contrast here, like...
I don't care.
In terms of moments your life has changed, oh, you also have two kids.
Yes, yes, it's true. I also wept when my son was born. It's true. Anyway, and so as far as like when did it start, it was, in a way, it was with Gollum. Because when I connected that imagery and realized that there was this whole world connected to this story that I had loved in the eighth grade, and it all came crashing down. You know, I actually had a similar moment when I met my wife, and then later, after we had met, we got to know each other, and after a couple of days, I was like, oh, crap, I'm going to want to marry this girl.
The last time I felt this was with Gollum, so.
No, but anyway, so it's so chapter five is always very special to me because it's connected to that day that everything changed. I can trace a lot of my life decisions and whatnot back to that day. So there you go. Anyway, I've been talking a ton. I have more to say, but I want to open it up to you guys too.
My question coming into this section here was, I know that Tolkien had a personal belief and love of his poetry, and I was curious where riddles fell in his skill set, I guess.
Poetry? I'm sorry, what did you say? What?
Like these riddles, mm-hmm. were they ones that he just had heard growing up or whatever, and threw into that versus like where he's trying to write his own poetry, or were mm-hmm, these things mm-hmm. he came up with on his own? You know, I'm just curious as to where that came in, because they're good riddles. Like they're mm-hmm. they're pretty solid riddles. Like,
yeah.
So I was just curious.
Great question. Riddles play a very important part in Old Norse and just a lot of Scandinavian mythology, a lot of their literature. And so if you go read the Prose Edda or the Elder Edda, you can find a lot of riddles in those and other sources. And that's where he found some, maybe not all, of these was in those old sources. And he kind of, he took them and spruced them up and made them rhyme in English and all this stuff. But the base riddles were from Old English and Old Norse and these things. So these are very old riddles. And it kind of creates, I don't know how conscious or even how real this would be for a majority of readers. I'm not sure, but it can create a sense of realism in the story. Like this is a creature who is ancient or who knows ancient things. And he and Bilbo are connected because of their connection through these ancient riddles, right? And so they both know the same riddles. Now we're getting into the Tom Shippey territory that I was kind of skipping over before.
Sorry, totally separate but semi-connected thought that just came through that discussion. Usually in a lot of mythology and things like that, trolls are the ones, like, at least I don't know if it's a change to modern, but like trolls are the riddlers. Like that's the way it is.
Oh, right, right.
Like you have your bridge trolls and things like that.
And in a way, Gollum is serving the function of a traditional troll.
Right.
So the three trolls in chapter two are, they're an obstacle to get past, but they're actually an obstacle that Bilbo and the dwarves veer toward. If you recall, they see a fire in the distance, right. and they want to go check it out. Let's go see what it is. They didn't have to do that. They could have just gone on with their journey and ignored it and said, no, we're on a mission. Let's go. But they decided to kind of veer off, right? And now in chapter five, if Bilbo wants to continue with his journey, or, you know, in the language of some of the, you know, fairy tales that we are familiar with from the Grimm brothers or whatever, if you want to cross the bridge, if you want to continue with your journey, you have to progress past the troll. Mm-hmm. And so Gollum is very much a troll character in that way, right?
Yeah, I thought it was kind of interesting, not role reversal, but just an interesting attribution that way.
Right. Okay, so Gollum. Here's a fun tidbit. Ready? Fun fact, everybody. Possible origin of the name Gollum. Okay, because names mean something to this guy, Tolkien. He's got a thing for words and names. The Old Norse gull, G-U-L-L or G-O-L-L, it means gold. And so you could just say G-O-L-L means gold. That's where Gollum came from. That doesn't make much sense. But there is one instance in Old Norse of the word finger gull. So finger gold, meaning a ring.
Ring.
And so Gollum is the keeper of the finger gold.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, there you go. And so that's one of those things. I don't think Tolkien ever came out and said, and this is where I came up with the name Gollum. But it's, you know, people teased it out and said, I wonder if that's what that is. And it seems like a plausible enough theory to me.
Yeah. So. Wouldn't it be hilarious though to find out, like, you just hacked one day and that's just the sound that came out and he's like, that works. Let's go with that. We're going to run with this one.
Cosmere Podcast, who's logged in on the live feed here, says, lots of people have kids, but how many people have actually read The Silmarillion? Yeah, that's so I earned my cry with The Silmarillion. Oh. Thank you very much.
That makes sense.
Okay, so differences in Gollum, because like I said earlier, he is the most changed character and the most changed thing in the book between the 1937 edition.
Other than the reader. Sorry. I had to. It was just sitting there on a tee.
That was good.
Thank you.
I liked it.
That was. I'm going to go sit in a corner now.
Yeah, well, it's occupado right now. now that I'm thoroughly derailed, there's the 1937 first edition, and then in 1951, he releases the second revised edition with this new chapter 5. And so it's gone through a few printings up till now, but now in 1951, he knows we're still a few years out from the release of The Fellowship of the Ring, but he's developed it to the point where he knows, like, if this is going to get published, chapter 5 no longer makes any sense. Because in the original edition, Gollum doesn't bet Bilbo. He doesn't say, I'm going to eat you or show you the way out. He says, I'm going to eat you or give you a present. Okay. And the present was the ring. He's got a magic ring. The only earthly possession I have to bet on this riddle contest is this ring. And so that's what he stakes up. And of course, Tolkien's like, he would never do that once that ring has a capital R, right?
Yeah.
And so he's genuinely willing to bet the ring. And when he loses the bet, he goes to find the ring. And the reason that he freaks out is that he can't make good on the bet. What am I going to do? I made a bet and now I can't pay up because I lost the ring. And that's why he's freaking out. And so
it's very honorable of him.
Exactly. And that's
Gollum is, if nothing, a creature of honor.
In a way, I think you could argue that with this original first edition, for that reason, it might have been even more obvious that Gollum was Bilbo's shadow. You know, in the way that the goblins are the dwarves' shadow, because he is so concerned with the rules and honor and all this stuff, and wanting to maintain the integrity of the bet. You know, cannibalism aside. and so, when that change is made, I think it's still probably pretty clear, but you could argue that it was even more clear at that point.
I'm wondering how that sort of change would go over nowadays.
Making
a big change like that to a character, like, yeah, that's it's a substantial change,
right? It's an interesting question. I mean, we have the example right now of the one I'm thinking of off the top of my head is Elantris. When the 10th anniversary edition of Elantris came out, Sanderson made a few changes to bring it a little more into line with the rest of the Cosmere books.
There's a pretty big change in Words of Radiance,
right?
When the hardback released,
that's right, or when the paperback
released. Yeah, sorry, paperback came out.
Yeah, yeah. That's true. So yeah, we've got some examples of a few little changes that are being made, but I don't know if they're quite as substantial. But on the other hand, you know, with that original version of The Hobbit, it's Gollum is in one chapter, mm-hmm. right? It's yeah. He's not like the major character until we get to Lord of the Rings, right? In the original, when Gollum can't find the ring, he shows Bilbo the way out as a courteous alternative. He says, oh, sorry about that. I was going to give you a present. I can't do that. Here, how about I show you the exit? And so, all right, great. Now let's get me out of here. Compared to the 1951 edition, in the later edition, Gollum is underhanded. He has no intention of showing Bilbo the way out mm-hmm. or giving him a present or anything, right? He's going to eat him one way or another.
He's a villain in this one.
Right. And so through these changes, Tolkien's trying to show just how twisted he's become from possession of the ring. Right?
Well, and I think part of that is his split personality that he has, like his Smeagol side, I guess. Even in The Hobbit is still, as he's talking to himself, you can still see he does have a more honorable side to him, mm-hmm. but it's also his other personality that is definitely very much the villain of, no, we're going to eat him.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, which I think, I remember on this last read through, that being something that became more apparent. It's not something, when you first meet Gollum, you don't really realize there's two personalities in there until you get to the part where he gets frantic and is trying to find it. And then all of a sudden the conversation is going between two people and you're like, ah, okay.
Okay, he's completely insane.
There it is. You know, beforehand, you don't read that into what he's doing.
Right. And I read the original chapter a long time ago, but it's been a while. And so when it comes to the specifics, like in the original, did he talk to himself in the same way or did Tolkien put that in to bring it more in line with Lord of the Rings Gollum? I don't remember, to be perfectly honest. But you can go online and, you can go online and search out PDFs or whatever. You can find bootleg versions of the original chapter. So yeah. Did I tell you, by the way? Oh, no, you were there. Hello. Did I tell you, by the way, Stephanie? when Ryan and I went to Sanderson's house, his wife let me hold an original 1937 Hobbit.
No.
The first edition. It was a highlight.
I bet.
It was a highlight. It was delightful. It was in like a velvet box and everything. It was great.
Yep. He was giving it as a gift. He was like, okay.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
I want to get famous enough that people give me gifts like that.
I know. I was on Instagram the other day and a celebrity got engaged and they were showing off all these gifts that were arriving from these like swanky companies that were obviously trying to get on their Instagram feed, right? So you send them a gift and I'm like, come on. The last person who needs to have that gifted to them. Right.
I'd take a free six pack from Del Taco. Come on.
I would take a free six pack from Del Taco. I've been counting carbs this week. I'm very upset.
And there's many of them.
That's true. I'm losing track. Okay, so. Boy, this really is Professor Craig episode. I hope people like all the little tidbits.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I think part of the bit, and Stephanie and I were talking about this before we came over, it's just, there's a lot to this story that we can get into nowadays. We can get into and talk about and and piece together. But in the just sitting this book in on its own, there's not a ton of deep philosophy or anything in these chapters to go through. I would say with a few rare exception moments, maybe you know the Gollum section with the riddles and is that. But at the core, again, this story is pretty simple, and that's part of the reason that it's lasted as long as it has it at its core. This is a very simplistic tale.
Right. I think there is maybe a little something, you know, we talk all the time about the three levels and all that. Maybe there's some sort of level three, like I'm going to take a lesson out of this in Bilbo's decision to spare Gollum and you know, leave that way. And so there's something there, but I think in general, you're right. This is...
So on a whole, it's a children's book.
Right.
And I think and the second time listening through, I can see that more now than I could the first time. Because, I mean, I was familiar with it enough when I had read The Hobbit the first time. And I had already seen the Lord of the Rings movies. But this time, like, I'm feeling like no, this is, it has the simplicity of being a children's book, but it also definitely does have some levels to it, or else so many adults wouldn't still love it, that there's more to it. And I think as a whole, with the Lord of the Rings trilogy, adds so much more to this story that more adults can relate to in that respect, because then you're looking at these, the lifelong journeys of these characters and not just this one adventure that Bilbo went on.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like what we were talking about. Like, I just, I don't know what to say about this book because
there will be more. If it's been a while since you read it, when we get to, because this, it is all about Bilbo's journey, right? He has to go there before he can come back again. And as he goes on the journey and learns and grows, we're going to get to Erebor, and we're going to have the Arkenstone incident. And there is a lot to talk about there with the choices that Bilbo makes and how much personal growth he shows. And
well, I think definitely as he's growing as a character, it gets, there's more to talk about. But we're still so early on in his story and his growth, as opposed to where he's just tired and a little on the whiny side because he doesn't have all of his comforts from home.
Right.
And granted, that's only going to get worse now that they have lost all of their stuff. But that's, I think it is nice growing with him, but so early on he is, he's a wealthy man that's missing his luxuries.
Sure.
That you're trying to be like, yeah, that's why I don't camp, because I love my luxuries. But I think that's where I'm at with this story right now, is it's really simple and it's hard to delve into his mind as a character.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. Ryan, any other thoughts?
Not at this point. We can move from Gollum.
Well, no, we can't.
Okay.
No, we cannot move from Gollum quite yet.
Okay.
Because it's something you brought up earlier, the questionable final riddle.
Yes.
Okay. So there is, especially in the original telling of the story, Bilbo's claim to the ring is pretty strong, despite the riddle. Because in the prologue to The Lord of the Rings, there's a line in there where Tolkien writes that, I actually have it here. The authorities, it is true, differ whether this last question was a mere question and not a riddle. But all agree that after accepting it and trying to guess the answer, Gollum was bound by his promise. And so, was it a good riddle? No. Was it a riddle at all? No, probably not. But by playing along, Gollum implicitly agrees that it's a riddle and that he's going to abide by the game. And so in that version, it's in the original version, the claim is pretty strong to the ring. Bilbo's claim is pretty strong. But now that the stakes in the second version, now that the stakes don't involve the ring at all and just the way out, Bilbo doesn't have a legit claim to the ring, because it wasn't offered as a birthday present. He stole it, right? And he tricked his way through the riddle contest. And so you can wiggle your way out of that second thing, but you can't wiggle your way out of the first. You stole the ring. You knew it was his. Yeah, sure, you picked it up off the ground.
I was like, isn't there some sort of law about the finders keepers thing? Like,
that's playground law.
He didn't know it was his when he picked it up out of the dirt. Granted, eventually he caught on to what Gollum was missing.
Right.
But
so anyway, Tolkien changes the story. And now by changing the story, Bilbo doesn't have as strong a claim to the ring because the birthday present thing is gone. And now it's just, you know, I freaking stole the ring and cheated in the riddle game and got away scot-free. And so as Tolkien makes the changes to chapter 5, now he's got to figure out a way to kind of justify his retconning and, like, you know, how are these two versions existing side by side? And, you know, is this going to confuse readers and whatnot? And so he actually builds his explanation. This is why I say it was so clever. He was one of the cleverest retconners ever.
Okay, I have no idea what the term retcon means.
Oh, okay, Ryan, you take this one.
For anyone else that's listening that has no idea what this term means.
Retroactive, concurrence or...
No.
Somebody, hey, YouTubers, help us out.
No,
here.
It's literally just even, it's retroactive continuity.
There you go.
You're changing the storyline of something that existed previously.
Got it. Okay.
Okay. So he's now retconned.
Okay.
This story, and now he's got to justify it. So he builds the explanation in, and he says that you know, Tolkien, I'm just translating this stuff. I found Bilbo's journals, and he wrote this story down, and I translated it and told you the story of the Hobbit. Well, that's what he told in his journals. You know, that's what he told in that original story. But then, as I uncovered more sources, and I found the Red Book of Westmarch that was written by Frodo, and he tells the real story that Gandalf got and all this stuff. And so I had to go back and fix the Hobbit with the real Gollum episode.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Pretty good. I think it's a pretty neat little retcon. Yeah. And not only that, but he actually builds it into the narrative of the Lord of the Rings as well. When Gandalf is telling the story, I believe it's in the Council of Elrond scene, he's recounting the story of Bilbo finding the ring. And he even mentions that Bilbo originally lied to him.
Mm-hmm.
That Bilbo, and even in the second edition of The Hobbit, when Bilbo comes out of the woods, they said, "How'd you get away?" And he decides not to tell anybody about the ring. And Gandalf kind of raises his eyebrows because he knows he's lying. And so Gandalf in The Lord of the Rings, you know, helps Tolkien retcon The Hobbit, which is fantastic. And so if you're going to do it, if you're going to retcon something, do it right. That's my
give yourself
here.
A little room. That's interesting. I've been going back and reading the Thrawn trilogy the last week and a half or whatever.
Like Heir to the Empire.
Yeah.
Heir to the Empire.
In all of the old Star Wars books, they've got this hit section about the Legends title, and it basically says these Legends titles are uncorroborated stories that were told but can't be proven, so they could exist, like they could have happened, they couldn't. I was like, oh, okay. So that's basically what's happening here, is where, you know, Bilbo's got his the true story, the legend,
right.
Yeah,
okay. That's a little different,
slightly different.
It's slightly different, and I reserve the right to be angry at Disney for that, but whatever. I don't want to go down that road. We're not going to get sucked into the Star Wars alternate, or what is it, expanded universe.
Yes.
So gosh, how far are we? Okay, we've got a few minutes left.
It's like, how far from what?
Yeah, how far do we have left? So Gollum,
we still haven't made it to Beorn's house.
I know, gosh. We're still in chapter 5.
Like, we still have another chapter to go before we get there.
Let's see, Bilbo takes the ring, puts the ring on, jumps over Gollum, decides to spare his life, and maybe this is something that we talk about again later, but suffice it to say that it's the right thing to do. Yes.
Okay.
Right. Well,
in the moment.
According to... Oh, okay, we are getting into this. Damn you, Ryan. According to the Lord of the Rings, as we read through the Lord of the Rings, and Gandalf and Frodo are talking about this incident. And Frodo says, I wish that he'd killed him when he had the chance. And in the movies, Gandalf just kind of like breezes by this and says, you know, it was pity that stayed Bilbo's hand. But we get a little more in-depth explanation that the reason that Bilbo was able to give up the ring, he's the only ring bearer up to that point who has been able to willingly give up the ring. The reason he was able to do that is because he began his possession of it from a place of pity. And so if he had stabbed out Gollum's eyes or whatever, you know, if he had gone that violent route that he was considering, the ring would have presumably had a much stronger hold on him throughout the rest of his life.
Okay.
So, yeah, it matters. Back off.
It worked out, obviously. You needed him at the end anyway.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we had another ring bearer that wouldn't give up the ring.
Right.
Like, and didn't he save his life a few times there? Gollum saved Frodo's life.
Yeah. As when they're guides in.
Right. Yeah. I mean, he goes to war with himself and trying to decide whether he's going to be Gollum or Smeagol.
It's like they needed him there. So.
Right.
Yes.
Of course, he was written.
I'm not really
to be
arguing
needed,
the merit of whether or not, you know, Gollum as a character should continue to exist.
Let's turn Bilbo into a horrible person.
So,
yes.
you know, I feel like I'm usually the bloodthirsty one on the podcast, but Ryan's over here saying, no, slit his friggin' throat.
Let's just kill him. We don't need him. Let's just kill him.
Someone had to play devil's advocate here. I've been possessed by the ring temporarily here.
Okay, all right. Well, let's see if we can get through chapters 6 and 7 in record time. So I'll
fiery pine cones.
Fiery pine cones. So, so out of the frying pan into the fire, Ryan, what happens in this chapter?
Fiery pine cones thrown at orgs.
There is one thing, like, in this, because this starts off with Bilbo finally coming back, and because the dwarves are all ready to leave him.
Yeah.
They're ready just to be like, peace out, we don't need you because you're dead, so we're just going to leave you for dead. And Gandalf's upset because he brought him on this trip. And when Bilbo shows up, I liked how all of a sudden he was respected.
Right.
Like, the dwarves now have this weird respect for him because he somehow survived on his own, which I guess was probably a first for him in his entire life, where he actually survived something.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't being carried on someone's back.
Right.
And snuck past the old one.
What?
Their scout that they had out. Balin?
Balin, yeah. The oldest of the dwarves.
Oh, I'm sorry. The old dwarf.
The best scout they had, and no one's ever gotten past him. And then...
Frodo just
Bilbo.
Yeah, Bilbo pops up. Yeah. When you said the old one, I thought I was going Lovecraft. I was like, what are you talking about? There are no old ones in this story. Yeah, so, okay, yeah, you're right. He is now finally respected by the dwarves. I'm going to go the symbolism route in chapter 6 here and note that we've gone through a few obstacles. I'm getting distracted by the kid playing with the microphone. Bilbo has surpassed a few obstacles, the trolls and now the goblins and now Gollum as well. And he's gone from his cushy lifestyle, has gone through a few things. He gets a respite at Elrond's house, but then he has to go through a bunch more stuff. And now he is through the mountains and out the other side. And this is very symbolic of, you know, his exit from the western side of the Misty Mountains, representing home and familiarity. And now he's exited out the east side, and this is the wilderness, or Wilderland, as Tolkien calls it. So now he's in the wilderness, and we'll notice now that he's gone through all this stuff, and now that he has left behind anything that was familiar to him, Bilbo is a different person.
Mm-hmm.
As we go through the story now, you'll notice it's not that he never wishes for his feather bed again, but he's, if not eager, a lot more willing at this point to take initiative. And so we'll see this again with the spiders, for instance, in Mirkwood, where, you know, he's going to take the initiative and save the dwarves, where he wasn't willing, for one thing, and wasn't able to do that before all of these things had happened to him.
Part of that is also comes from the way the dwarves are now treating him. I think it's one thing when you have someone that has gone through whatever, the moment that someone else starts respecting them for it, they start respecting themselves more for it.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure if he had gone through all of this and the dwarves were like, oh, well, Bilbo's back now, let's pick him back up so we can get going, that he might have started seeing himself back to who he was, and that change wouldn't have been permanent like it was. I think the dwarves that moment where the dwarves were like, yes, we are now going to see you more as an equal, made Bilbo now realize he is more of an equal.
Mm-hmm.
That if they hadn't had that moment, then I think Bilbo would have just regressed back into who he was.
Right.
And that change wouldn't have happened.
Ooh, I like this a lot.
Thank you. I had something important to say.
This is fantastic, because this is what we're talking about. You know, what are the personal lessons we want to take from a book like this, and from such a simple little kid story? And I'd never thought of this before, where we so often just view ourselves as Bilbo. He is our vehicle through the story, and so he's the one who is learning all the lessons. But if we put ourselves in the place of the dwarves, how often do we have interactions with somebody where we have a choice to show them the respect that they need, maybe deserve, or to discount them and to discredit them and to underestimate them?
Well, and I think I've learned that lesson a lot as a parent, raising my child, seeing other people raise their children around the same age, that the more you treat a child with the respect that they deserve as a human, and not just the fact that they're a child, they're going to come back and be, they're going to have the maturity level that they need to continue to progress in this world.
There is a point that's being brought up on the YouTube chat here. Sorry, we're going back to the symbolism of Bilbo becoming a different person. Well, I guess we're still kind of on that point. Joshua Harkey says his button popping off is fantastic symbolism. Agreed, right? So he's squeezing through the door and he can't quite get through. And as Gollum is just about to reach him, he gives one last shove to get himself through and the buttons on his waistcoat pop off.
And he mentions it at least three more times in the book.
The buttons.
About his buttons, about right. missing his buttons.
So. And he misses his buttons, right? But those buttons represent his old self. And now you've got to leave that behind if you want to continue on your journey. So anyway, great point. Well done. And then the goblins chase him down and they go up in pine trees and Gandalf lights pine cones and they throw them at the wargs and the goblins and it's fantastic fun. And the eagles come and grab them and everybody hates the eagles and I've never understood why, but that's a thing.
That's the thing. Like, do people hate the eagles or do people hate the fact that
The eagles are always saving them?
I question the purpose of the eagles. I feel like the only reason the eagles were written into the story was because they were up in a tree and they couldn't figure out how to get them down. So let's have these ginormous eagles fly in that don't really do much in the story other than fly in and fly back out. I even forget that they're in the Battle of the Five Armies. I mean, Bilbo even comments, the next time I see these eagles was in this battle from a distance. Like, they were there, but they weren't an integral part of where he was in the battle. Like, the eagles, I don't...
There seems to be, like, two camps for the eagles in The Lord of the Rings, and it's the people who love them as this great and honorable race, these high and mighty leaders, and they are to be revered and respected, and that's why they aren't used very much, because they're too important to to be used in menial things such as saving Middle Earth. And then there's the other side, the side that just came out of my cynical piece there. It's like, well, why weren't they used? Like, that's exactly what you said. They're kind of just a cop-out way of dealing with something.
From in a shallow reading, it's, you're absolutely right. And I don't mean shallow to be too pejorative. I just mean, like, if you don't know a ton about kind of the backstory and the mythology that Tolkien had created, it's easy to just say, why didn't they just fly on the eagles, right? There are reasons, and we probably don't need to litigate all of those right now, but those reasons exist, and we can just leave it at that.
I'm sure they do.
But in this story, you know, as told in 1937, we didn't have any of that other backstory, so yeah, it's easy to just say, there's a nice little Deus Ex Machina. Come pull their fannies out of the fire.
My problem that I have is that I can't visualize this with any, like, it's a giant eagle, and it either sounds like it's either Sam Eagle from the Muppets talking, or it's, you know, some super patriotic guy, and I blame it on, you know, the American connection to the eagle and everything, like, that it just sounds, that, you know, this great Lord of the Eagles comes in, and it sounds like.
So now he's coming in on his flying Ford F-150, AR-15s blazing.
Hey, Gandalf, what's going on, man? It's sure. Like, you're in trouble. Let's get you out of here. Not quite. But.
And all of our international listeners are going, what?
Yeah. No, they're just kind of nodding along. Yeah, that's exactly, that's how we visualize all Americans.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's a good point. Yes. So these are very highly American eagles at this point. So, okay, we need to move past this. Oh, one question that does come up sometimes is whether the Lord of the Eagles in The Hobbit is Gwaihir, who saves Gandalf from the top of Orthanc.
Mm-hmm.
It can't be, because Gwaihir, or Gandalf.
Clearly, it can't be.
It can't be, I mean, like, because Gandalf says, twice now you've borne me, and both of those times are accounted for in The Lord of the Rings, and so this cannot be the same eagle. So... different guy. Just, you know, anybody who was wondering. There you go. Different guy, different eagle. So,
I'm gonna design a Middle Earth Uber symbol that looks like an eagle and it's called Gwihir, but it's spelled wrong.
Just, is that just to get me to burn it?
Just as a bumper sticker, you know, we can put it out there.
So let's go to Baron's house. Go to Baron's house and
bees.
Yes,
the bees.
Have you seen that? Have you seen the Nicolas Cage?
Yeah, I watched
version
that sequence.
Of, what's that movie called? Dang it,
I don't remember.
Oh crap!
I've just watched that segment.
Nicolas Cage, come on YouTube, save me here. Nicolas Cage in his version of, oh, this is gonna kill me.
Know.
Are you looking it up?
Yep, Nicolas Cage, the Wicker Man.
Wicker Man. Oh man, Wicker Man.
They kill off his character by putting his head in a cage of bees.
Oh.
They don't kill him that way.
They torture him.
They torture him with
that.
It
would be
yeah.
pretty torturous.
So okay, now wow. We've got no time left on the podcast and we're tangenting.
Yeah, that's what Nicolas Cage does.
Yeah, I know. So we're at Baron's house. Yes, bees, in part because he is clearly a bear man. Right?
He likes like his honey.
A werebear. So Beorn is Old English for man or warrior, as seen in a few Old English texts, but it literally means bear.
Well, then.
There you go. And so it was a word that originally meant bear, and then, you know, I don't know, people fought so fiercely that it gradually became a word for a warrior.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
He fought hard on that one.
What's that?
Tolkien, he thought hard for that one.
He probably didn't have to at that point. He knew it all so well. Anyway, so in this one, this is our last gasp, I guess, before the story really starts getting intense. Mm-hmm. We've had the trolls, and then we get a rest with Elrond. Yes. And then we have two big problems with the goblins and Gollum, and then we get a rest with Baron's house. And so, you know, it's like training, right? Everybody's leveling up, and now we're about to head to our final destination, which is, well, not quite. I mean, we got a long ways to go, but no more real rest stops. There's a fake one at Lake Town that we'll get to. But this is our last resting point, and so this is where we're going to leave it on the podcast, unless you guys have anything pressing to say about Beorn. I don't. It's an interesting chapter, I guess, in that he's kind of an interesting character. He's kind of menacing at the same time that he's welcoming and all that.
He's one of those characters that is, I don't know what the correct affiliation there. He's a neutral that's helpful, in the sense that like providing them once they slowly get introduce themselves and everything. But as they leave, and he offers them the ponies and everything, but basically follows them to protect the ponies.
Right.
Like if you do something to this, he's still going to kill you.
Right.
Like, so I can't think of any character comparisons, other characters who are like that. But just that person who's he's a good character, but only so far as it exists in his own world of,
right.
I care about these creatures. This is also the, if I remember right, he's the one that we get our first mention of Radagast in,
mm-hmm.
Mm, even right. though, you know, he's not going to play a huge role in what we're doing in the book. But like, we're introduced to another wizard.
Right.
It's like, okay.
Or at least the idea of another wizard.
Yeah, there's more out there.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. So shall we leave it there? Stephanie, any final thoughts, or are we good?
No, I'm good.
Okay. So we'll leave it there. Next time we will go through Mirkwood and probably hang out with the elves. And then the next episode will feature 20 minutes of nothing but barrel riding. Just everybody prepare yourselves for that.
I think it was a very, very impressive highlight of the Hobbit telling.
So thank you everybody for tuning in. I didn't do this up top, but you know, go to reddit.com. thelegendarium.reddit.com to join the conversation. patreon.com/legendarium is where you can support the show. I will be doing a little bit more on Patreon than I have lately. But I do just want to say thank you to those who have joined up recently. Jason Downer is the most recent, is a $3 patron, and we very much appreciate that contribution to what we're doing here. It really does take a remarkable amount of time and funds. So any help you can give is great. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Next week, Blue Team is coming up again with something, I think. Or maybe it's a full team episode. I can't remember.
See. And also YouTube. We're going to start throwing that one in there, too.
Oh, yeah. This is live on YouTube. So make sure, if you haven't yet, make sure you go subscribe. And we're going to be doing a lot more of these. Today was a one-camera setup, but I'm going to learn how to do a lot more than that. So, yeah, thank you to the YouTube live audience for joining in with us. I hope to see you guys on future episodes as well. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.